And we will hear argument next in Hutchinson v. Marshall. Counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Brian Pomerantz on behalf of Appellant Edwin Hutchinson. This case is most easily understood when parsed into three time periods. In the first time period, Mr. Hutchinson is entitled to equitable tolling because, as the magistrate judge noted, his bipolar disorder caused him to be prescribed a bevy of drugs that caused sedation. These medications worked synergistically, decreasing his mental functioning and rendering him incompetent throughout the period. The magistrate judge effectively conceded that Mr. Hutchinson may be entitled to equitable tolling for period one and skipped directly to period two to deny equitable tolling.
Well, we're on a clear error standard here, right? Then the magistrate made findings?
The magistrate did make findings, yes, Your Honor.
And we review from the standpoint of clearly erroneous.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So you have a bit of an uphill climb.
I do. But I believe that the problem in this case is, as this Court noted in Whalum Hunt v. Early, determinations of equitable tolling are supposed to be fact-based. In a case like this, where the underlying hearing in which the facts are supposed to be developed is not a full and fair evidentiary hearing, I think we have a problem. Because the facts that the Court relied on and were A, incomplete, and B, I think the Court misinterpreted some of the facts, and that's evident from the record itself. For instance, the Court held that in evaluating different, there were two experts in the case. In evaluating the expertise of petitioner's expert, certain attributions were made to him that were incorrect. For instance, the Court said that he said that...
What page are you on of the decision?
I'm sorry, I don't have the page.
Okay, that's fine.
I can find that for you.
That's okay, go ahead.
But what the Court said that Mr. Hutchinson's expert had said that charting was not done, and in fact charting was done. In fact, what Mr. Hutchinson's expert said was daily charting was not done. So that was correct. Daily charting was not done in this case. The record here showed that Mr. Hutchinson's behavior was inconsistent in period two. Mr. Hutchinson skipped several evaluations in period two, including three out of four mandatory quarterly evaluations that were central to the idea of whether he could be released from mental health services. Despite the fact that he skipped three out of those four, he was taken off of mental health services. The Court's reliance on the reports and progress notes during period two that described him as euthymic is misplaced. It's misplaced because, according to respondent's expert, to appellee's expert, Dr. Power, who was at one point the chief psychiatrist at Mr. Hutchinson's facility, quote, most diagnoses into corrections are incorrect. This is a powerful statement to be made by Dr. Power, and it really has to call into question the determinations made by the magistrate court in how much you can rely on the records from period two. Moving to period three, if that answers Your Honor's question as to period two and why we think that is at issue here. Moving to period three, Mr. Hutchinson should be entitled to statutory tolling in that period because periods one and two would work as a bridge to period three. The state petition filed on February 27, 2004 should be considered timely after equitable tolling is applied in periods one and two. The timeliness of the state petition is a federal question. It was properly filed because Mr. Hutchinson was incompetent to file prior to at least June 9, 2003, which is when the Department of Corrections stopped evaluating his mental health status. The filing of his petition the following February was only 263 days after that period of time. The problem in this case is I'm not sure what we do in a situation where the court has not fully allowed us to develop the record. We asked for experts, which we were not allowed to bring into the hearing. Cross-examination of the state's expert was cut off at the hearing. Mr. Hutchinson essentially didn't have his full day in court. And in that situation, it creates a real problem when you have equitable tolling, which is supposed to be a fact-based determination. there's no questions, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
You may do so, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the other side.
Good morning, Your Honors. Deputy Attorney General Richard S. Moskowitz for the warden. May it please the court, the primary issue, as I think the court has recognized here, does not involve any legal question of any moment. It's simply whether the district court's credibility determinations and factual findings were clearly erroneous.
There's the secondary issue of whether they were based upon an adequate opportunity to develop the record.
Yes, and
would you address that first? Because obviously if there was a complete opportunity, then the factual findings would have great force. But if there wasn't, why shouldn't this be sent back for further?
Your Honor, the short answer to that issue isn't properly before this court. It's outside the scope of the Certificate of Appealability, which was issued by the district court. There's been, to my knowledge, no request in this court to expand the certificate to cover that issue, and it's a little late to be doing that now. We've not had the opportunity to brief it. It seems to me if the requirement for a certificate of appealability means anything at all, it means that the court has to make a threshold determination as to that issue.
I thought your answering brief addressed the uncertified issue. You did brief it, I think, didn't you?
No, we said there was no jurisdiction and left it at that.
Well, it's not a matter of jurisdiction exactly, but okay, I'll go back and look at that.
Well, we
want to address it on the merits now or at all?
Well, I can do it briefly. I mean, if the court truly believes that that issue is in play, I would request an opportunity to brief it, because we have not in fact addressed it on the merits. But I could say at the outset simply that what he's referring to is as far as supposedly being denied the opportunity to present evidence simply amounted to the magistrate judge ruling on normal objections that are made routinely in the course of every trial and making a determination that the questions asked were not proper and making a further discretionary decision that he'd had an adequate period of time to develop his cross-examination. And
counsel had about 45 minutes to an hour. Am I reading correctly?
I don't recall exactly. I think what I can tell you is that his direct examination of his expert was substantially longer than mine. So naturally you would expect that my cross-examination of his expert would be longer than his cross-examination of my expert, but in fact exactly the opposite was the case. I think that we were starting to get into a lot of areas where essentially the psychiatric records, the underlying psychiatric records, spoke for themselves. There were also some some objections with respect to whether the record said this or that, but the point was that the records were what they were, and the question was whether the opinions voiced by the experts were in fact supported by the objective evidence. So in that sense, I think the court was within its discretion in terms of saying we need to move this forward. But again, I don't believe that issue is even properly here in the first instance. Shall I continue?
Do you want to go back and talk about the three time periods? Or?
Sure. I'm not sure exactly what he's defining as the three time periods, but I would agree that there are three. Between March 2000 and March 2002, when the petitioner was receiving medication for bipolar disorder. The psychiatric records consistently described his mental functioning as WNL, medical shorthand for within normal limits. And despite Dr. Leavitt's, I believe that's the pronunciation, insistence that the drug regimen used to treat petitioner was so sedating that he would have been too drowsy to compose a federal habeas petition, there was absolutely no evidence that the medications had that effect in this case. To the contrary, the symptom most consistently reported by petitioner to all of the various clinicians who treated him during that time period was that he couldn't sleep, that he was too wide awake, not that he was too drowsy. In addition, from March 2002, and this would be, I guess, the second time period, from March 2002, when the medications were stopped at petitioner's own insistence, through June 2003, the psychiatrists continued to observe him and continued to describe his mental state as euthymic, which is psychiatric speak for bipolar disorder or bipolar patients who are not currently experiencing either manic or depressive symptoms at the particular time. In other words, they're right in between. They're going through an essentially normal period. And they also concluded that his mental functioning remained within normal limits during that time period. So given that we've now gone through 3 years after the petitioner's conviction became final, we really don't even need to, as the magistrate judge recognized, we don't even need to get to the third period. But even as to the third period, what we have essentially is an absence of evidence. From June 2003, when he stopped going in for his psychiatric appointments, until July 2005, when he filed his federal habeas petition, we have essentially nothing. He was examined once in July 2004, when he was transferred to a new prison. He denied needing any psychiatric treatment at all, and there was no indication in the nurse's notes, the notes of the nurse who examined him, that there was anything wrong with that there was anything psychiatrically wrong with him. Also, despite his incompetency to file a federal habeas petition, Mr. Hutchison managed to file a state habeas petition in February 2004. Now, my esteemed opposing counsel complains about the fact that although charting was done, it wasn't done on a daily basis. But the question is, what result from that fact? The petitioner has the burden of proof to establish equitable tolling. If daily charting hasn't been done...
I don't think that was his point. I think he was talking about the magistrate judge not giving an accurate accounting and interpreting non-daily charting as no charting at all.
Well, I think...
So what is your response to the assertion that the court here made an unreasonable finding by misinterpreting the medical record?
My point would be that the issue of whether the charting was done on a daily basis is irrelevant. There is no requirement anywhere listed by Dr. Leavitt or anywhere else that says...
I think we're not communicating.
I'm sorry.
I understood his point to be that the magistrate judge found that no charting was done, and therefore the expert had nothing to rely on for his opinion. In fact, there was some charting, but it wasn't daily charting. And so did the magistrate judge correctly understand the record?
I believe he did, Your Honor. I think what the expert testified to was that no daily charting was done, but there was an implication in that that charting doesn't mean anything unless it's done on a daily basis. And what the magistrate judge was, in effect, reject that because it doesn't square with common sense, and took note of the fact that charting was done when the petitioner came in for his appointments, which is exactly what you would expect. You don't expect in any setting that a person is going to be followed 24/7, 365 days a year. That isn't practical. Hopefully that's answered the question.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired.
Okay, thank you.
You have some reserved time, counsel.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. First to Judge Graber, you're absolutely correct. The complaint is not that he was not daily charted. The problem here is that the judge seems to have misinterpreted Dr. Leavitt's testimony at the hearing and to have used it as a point against Dr. Leavitt in his credibility. And that was the point that I was trying to make before. The cross-examination, and I'll address the COA issue before I sit down, but the cross-examination was more than just direct testimony. And one of the problems at the hearing that day was that the rules seemed to keep changing on Mr. Hutchison, so that when Mr. Hutchison tried to strike parts of appellee's expert's declaration that had been submitted before the hearing, he was told he couldn't do that because that's what cross-examination was for. When cross-examination was cut short and Mr. Hutchison said that he had more questions, he was told that Dr. Power had not been on the stand very long and therefore it was appropriate to cut it short. The actual cross-examination at the moment that Mr. Hutchison was stymied was about the declaration that had been put forth by Dr. Power. So that went somewhat uncross-examined, as I only got about partway through my cross-examination on that declaration. So how long Dr. Leavitt was on the stand is really irrelevant to that issue. It was going to a combination of Dr. Power's time on the stand as both his direct testimony and his declaration that had been submitted earlier.
How much time did this sequence take?
My cross-examination was less than an hour. You are correct.
Say 45 minutes to an hour?
Yes,
somewhere
at 45 minutes we were stopped. I said I had a number of questions left and I was given a few more minutes. Okay. In that time period, effectively, as the record shows, the time went for naught because the magistrate judge started sustaining a series of objections to inquiry into the declaration, and I didn't really get to ask very many questions during the period. The certificate of appealability is not something that we were denied on the full and fair evidentiary hearing. It's something we didn't really ask for on the full and fair evidentiary hearing because it seems implicit that a full and fair evidentiary hearing is what you should have when something is having an evidentiary hearing. I think that it would be implicit in any examination of a hearing by this court that full and fair is a basic standard for that. The state did brief it in its briefing. It's where it was first raised that perhaps Arcoa was not legitimate on that point. And certainly this court, if it believes that's correct, has the authority under Federal Rule of Appellate Procedure 22 to consider it as an uncertified issue. Additionally, I'm not sure under the holding in Harbison that this even needs a COA, that this goes to the ultimate issue of his state holding and therefore even would require a COA on that particular point. The three time periods, just to be clear, are defined in the briefing. The first time period responding to appellee is not really what's at issue. The magistrate judge skipped over the first time period for a reason. He skipped over the first time period because it wasn't clear to him that Mr. Hutchison wasn't sedated during the period. That's in his report and recommendation at the excerpts of record from 16 to 19. The second time period, as I said in my initial argument here, the euthymic findings are inconsistent with his behavior. They're also not really reputable when you consider the testimony of Dr. Power, which is found in the excerpts of record at 214 and 215. In that sequence, he explains that they're overworked, that they see more patients than they can handle, and that frequently they do not try to diagnose people. They just sort of go along with what was on the charts before them. So to point to charts and say, well, it says within normal limits here, I'm not sure that that really means anything in that circumstance. Dr. Power conceded that the skipped examinations that Mr. Hutchison was doing during period two could be bipolar decompensation. That's found in the record at 528. And the third time period's not about the lack of records. The third time period really is a statutory tolling time period that would follow after Roy v. Lampert. If the first two entitle him to equitable tolling, then he would be entitled to statutory tolling in that period.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case just argued will be submitted for decision.